We will open a public hearing on HM1, House Memorial 1. Representative Knopf.
Thank you, Mr. Vice Chair. State Representative Tim Knopf, District 54. HM1 is a House memorial that simply denounces a study that was published in the American Psychological Association journal called The Bulletin, or the Bulletin. Some of the conclusions the authors of the study came to were that the children and adults could in fact engage in sex, and they want to have a value-neutral term assessed to that for the purposes of science. And the study that was published didn't get much attention until Radio Pacto host in Philadelphia brought it forward. And then Dr. Laura Schlesinger, a radio personality, talk show host on the national level, also brought it to the public's attention, where outrage ensued from the general public. And I'd just like to read you a couple of the conclusions that the authors of the study came to, and I would offer these as reasons why I think this study is particularly dangerous and endangers the health and welfare of our children. The authors of the study in their summary and conclusion quote, a willing encounter with positive reactions would be labeled simply adult child sex, a value neutral term. If a young person felt that he or she did not freely participate in the encounter, and if he or she experienced negative reactions to it, then it would be labeled child sex abuse, a term that implies harm to the individual. In that case, would be valid. Then again, furthermore, unlike adult child sex, adolescent adult sex has been commonplace cross-culturally and historically, often in socially sanctioned forms, and may fall within the normal range of human sexual behaviors. But a willing encounter between an adolescent and adult with positive reaction on the part of the adolescent would be labeled scientifically as adult adolescent sex. The very fact that a professional organization would publish something that, in fact, goes contrary to what their stated goal is, which is to stop child sex abuse. In fact, the American Psychological Association has said that they don't believe that a child can consent to sex with an adult, yet they went ahead and published the study anyway. So I believe that as public policymakers, we need to act accordingly when something is published that, in my view, and in the views of many others, endangers the health and welfare of our children and directly contradicts public policy of the state of Oregon that we've had for, you know, essentially since the beginning of the history of our state, that child sex abuse is wrong. We have laws, very strict laws against it. We recently passed it's basically two strikes and you're out. Law in regards to essentially sex crimes, and child sex abuse is one of those crimes. And I think this is a place where it's appropriate for us to, as a members of the House of Representatives of the state of Oregon, to denounce the so-called conclusions that the authors of the study came to, and ask that we, in the resolution, it calls for the fact that we are not necessarily opposed to science on this, and it says the House of Representatives, the Southern Legislative Assembly of the State of Oregon, encourages competent investigations to continue to research the effects of child sex abuse using the best methodology so that the public and public policymakers may act on accurate information. And I think it's important for us to say something in regards to this study. Several other states, I think there's five states, have already started some sort of legislation in regards to either a House joint resolution or a House memorial doing essentially the same thing. The text of our memorial came from Alaska. In Alaska, it passed overwhelmingly, I think unanimously, and I would hope that it would pass in Oregon in the same manner. I have much information in regards to this particular study, I know we don't have a full committee here, and I think it's been distributed to the committee, and I don't know how much time all the rest of the members have had to take a look at it. But I would certainly encourage the members of the committee to take a look at that information. There's a specific study that I'd like to draw your attention to. It's actually an analysis. It's an in-depth analysis of the what's called the RIM study, and that's the RIM is one of the authors. It's done by Stephanie Dallin. And I think this is about 13 pages, and I think it pretty well documents what the problems are with the study, the fact that many of the reviews that were done on other studies that were in the final study were not peer-reviewed. And there's many other problems that we could get into and spend quite a bit of time with, but I'm not interested in taking a lot of committee time, but I did want to come before you and urge you to act positively on HM1 and protect the health and welfare of the children of the state of Oregon with this particular statement.
Thank you very much. I am at this point like to add a few comments. Representative Mills came actually with this issue to me looking for a priority bill, and I had one, and I was happy to join with Representative Mills on this issue. I think that it's there's one where it's important for us to draw the line and say this is not appropriate and not legitimize the study that was done. And I'd like to the analysis that Representative Mills mentioned, I'd like to read the conclusion of that into the record. I thought it was a lengthy article, but the conclusion I think nails it really pretty well. It says, and I'm quoting from this analysis, it says, Lynn, Tomovich, and Bowserman's conclusion are not supported by the large and growing body of literature documenting the harmful and long-lasting effects of child or adult child sexual contact. Our children deserve the best science has to offer, not reckless conclusions, buttressed with statistical manipulations of misleading data. Rather than advancing science, this study appears to intend on legitimizing pedophilia and sexualizing children. I thought that concisely nailed the issue. Any questions for Mr. Moore? Thank you very much.
Mr. Vice Chair, if that entire study could be put in the record, I would appreciate that. And thank you for your time. And hopefully when we get the full committee here, we can act on this, go to work session.
I think we will. I think we're all standing outside the door. Yeah. So we'll close the public hearing.
Thank you.
Is there anyone else actually in the audience who wishes to testify in House Memorial 1? Thank you, Representative. Please introduce yourself for the record and proceed.
Lou Barris, Christian Coalition, Sure Star, and I guess there's no committee.
The Invisible Committee.
Invisible Committee. But I just want to second Representative Slope on this, that I think enough's enough, and I think we need to draw the line in society of taking advantage of our children. And if we care about our children, if we love our children, we need to protect them, because I have 11 grandchildren, and so we nurture those children, you know, I almost like my own, and so we need to protect them. And so I just recommend that you enter that in, you know, into the minutes and the committee and the full House and the Senate would pass it.
Thank you very much. Anyone else wish to testify? We'll close the public hearing in House Memorial 1. As soon as I have a committee, we'll have a work session.
I think I know where I can find a committee.
Ready to go. had the first 59
Early
4th,
right?
Right. Really? Well, he's from probably 7th floor. I don't know what garden this is. I should be
quiet. That's it. Welcome to Rules.
Look, Kennedy. And go to a work session on SCR 23. And we have a number of amendments that have been produced for SCR 23. Would you see us up to date here, please?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. SCR 23 is the amendment to the Constitution proposed to relate make time limits in office, and instead of having specific time limits, we a chamber of the legislature to make it a 12-year lifetime limit. The resolution as written would apply to terms of office beginning on or after December 3rd, 1992, which was the effective date of the original term limit law. But the original resolution also specifies that service to fill vacancies in legislative offices, in other words, appointments would not count as full terms, but only as the amount of time that they actually are. Whereas the original term limit constitutional amendment approved by voters had vacancies, appointments to fill vacancies account for a full term. There are three sets of amendments that I'm aware of, Mr. Chair, that we have the dash three and the dash one amendments presented at the previous meeting on the bill. In the early part of the month. The dash three amendments were from Representative Edwards. And instead of applying the measure for terms that began on December 3rd, 1992, would apply the measure to full terms that begin on or after the effective date of the measure.
The dash two, do you know anything about the dash two?
No, Mr. Chair.
Somebody has some dash twos up there somewhere. And the ones that...
And the dash fours are new today. They're at your place.
They are.
And, Mr. Chair, the dash four amendments provide that appointments to fill vacancies do not count at all as part of the 12-year time limit proposed in the resolution, 12-year lifetime limit that's proposed in the resolution. And since the new language in the dash four would apply to persons elected on or after the 1992 election, they also mean that time that's spent as an appointee after 1992 would not count against the new lifetime limit.
Okay.
And the dash one amendment from Representative Beck, instead of making it 12-year lifetime limit, make it a 12-year consecutive limit. So that if you're out of office for 2 years, you would be able to return and have a new 12-year.
Mr. Chair,
yeah.
I had a question for staff and the bill itself. On line 23, is that new language that would basically affect all statewide? And I believe there are some that are not currently limited in term. Like I believe the Attorney General is one.
Mm-hmm.
Bowling, Department of Labor.
Mr. Chair, Representative Edwards, lines 23 and 24 appear to be the same as lines 11 and 12, which have been deleted. I don't believe that they ever changed.
Yeah, I believe that's right.
Mr. Chair, I don't know, for some reason, like Representative Starr and I were talking about, I do believe there are two statewide that are not subject to any term limits. I'm pretty sure about that, but I don't know one.
I'm concerned that it should be 24 and 24.
Oh, anyway.
We can show to the, I have passwords to council to be on hand if you have a question.
Okay, well, we'll call them up then. In the meantime, I think Representative Whip, if you're here, you'd like to speak to the bill. So Representative Whip, come on up.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I'm here today in opposition to SJR 23. I'm sure you all can remember in 1992 when the voters of Oregon passed our current term limits law, that was done through the initiative process. It was placed there by the people going out and getting the signatures and submitting the vote to the people where it passed overwhelmingly. I believe term limits are working. In fact, I think if you look at this legislature today, I think we have a very strong first-term class, both Republican and Democrat, I think, that have added a lot to the legislature. I would also point out to the members of this committee the extreme difficulty of defeating incumbents in elections. In fact, in 1998, not one out of more than 50 incumbents running in the general election were defeated. There were three incumbents defeated in primaries, not one in the general election. And you have a re-election rate, consequently, of well over 90, closer to 95%. I don't see that changing. In reality, as we know, the difficulty in defeating incumbents stems from a number of reasons, one of the big reasons being the fact that the lobby money, which is the big source of funds for legislative campaigns, overwhelmingly goes to incumbents. I think if this measure gets referred to the voters, I think it will lose, but I think even more so, the legislature will be looked at as self-serving in view of the fact that this measure came into our law through the initiative process. I think it's inappropriate for us in these circumstances where it will directly benefit those of us who are referring it to the people to try to change the law or listen to the law through the referral process. And in fact, I think this measure, if it goes to the voter, will lead to voter cynicism about the process and about the legislature being more concerned about their perks and prerogatives and powers than they are enacting the will of the people as it relates to term limits. Polling, which I have seen, I think supports what I am saying. I have seen two different polls which showed that the voters do not support changing the term limits laws and asked why the legislature would do it. Overwhelmingly, what voters said was simply to preserve their own power for a longer period of time. I very much believe in the citizen legislature. I think our current term limits law, which allows for service for up to 12 years in the legislature, helps preserve a citizen legislature effectively. If you serve three terms in the House, which is 6 years, you can look at running for other office. Otherwise, you get the opportunity to get out of the way and allow someone else to come in and serve. And I think there are thousands of people, in fact, tens of thousands of people that are interested in serving. And if they had a fair chance to come in and run and be part of the process here in the legislature, would be interested in running. I think our term limits laws help create that process and create that turnover for more citizens to get involved in the legislative process. So what I would ask the committee to do is not refer this to the voters. I think it would be a black mark in the legislature. Instead, let's let our term limits law work. I believe it is working. A number of our current members are here because of term limits. I think overwhelmingly they are good members. I look forward to them serving their time, and I look forward to new people coming in who can pick up the slack and add additional elements of capability to the overall legislative process. And I would ask you not to refer this to the voters. I have not seen a groundswell where the people want this law changed. I think if the people want this law changed, it should be done through the initiative process and go out and get the signatures, put it on the ballot, and let the people vote for it. And I think this is an inappropriate way of dealing with this issue. With that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you much, very much, Representative Witt. Any questions, Representative Witt?
Yes, Representative Edwards.
Thank you, Representative Witt, to be here. A couple of questions. One, one of the arguments for this is, in essence, we're not really changing term limits other than working within confines. How do you respond to that? Now, it is true, mechanically, we're changing from 6, potentially on the House side, up to 12. Assuming you get reelected, there's always that assumption in this as well. And that actually, we heard testimony too from Senator Miller that the amount of turnover within 12 years is actually pretty high if you look historically. I guess, how do you respond to that? Are we really changing the will of the people that much?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, I think we definitely are. By the way, the reelection part of it is the easiest part of it. I think if you look at the last few cycles, the reality of it is that incumbents rarely lose in general elections. But over and beyond that, presently you serve your 3 term, 6 years in the House, and now you have to make a decision. Either you're going to run for the Senate, you're going to run for some other office, or maybe you're going to get out of politics for a period of time. Immediately that forces that turnover into the House, which provides the opportunity for other folks to run, knowing that they don't have to overcome the enormous burden of defeating an incumbent, which is an enormous burden. If we change the law to 12 years, we've doubled that length of time that person can serve in that House seat, thus blocking, effectively, really, not legally, but effectively, blocking the opportunity for other people to serve for twice that length of time. So, no, I think it makes a very, very significant difference. And I think that the current term limits law was put there with specific periods of time of service, specifically and for good reason. And saying that we just go to a 12-year limit overall, I think is a very significant and substantive change in what the voters intended. And I think the effect of that change would be readily felt. You'd have a lot less turnover in these positions. And I would make the argument that turnover is a good thing because it provides for a citizen legislature more of an open process that allows more people to serve.
One last thing. You raise a concern that I've had about this measure, and I'm a member of the measure. And I really, as my testimony initially when I brought this before the committee was to say, I think this is worth having a discussion. Whether now is the time you go out and at least address whether or not you believe it's an issue, that's maybe a difference we may have. But for a discussion point, I think it was valid to bring. I guess my question, and one of the issues you raise, which is a concern to me, is sort of the potential self-serving piece of it. You say it should come from the vote of the people. We might disagree about what our role is relative to writing law on this particular subject, but do you feel like, I'm offering an amendment that basically would take all of us out. That is, anybody who's under existing law or similar would be still subject to it, even if you want to move on to the Senate. We would live in the existing configuration, and anybody newly elected would fall under this change. Does that give you any more comfort with what we're doing?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Edwards, actually it does. I mean, I still would not support it because I really believe in the long term we're going to be better off having the true concept of a citizen legislature where there's going to be more turnover, again, given the fact that it's almost impossible to beat incumbents. But at least that takes away the self-serving argument. And I think from the standpoint of people that are interested in the policy of this relative to term limits and maybe disagree with the term limits law, the way it's currently written, if you can remove from the change, the application of the change, all people currently serving in the legislature, at least then you can make, I think, a more credible argument that you are doing this for policy reasons, not for self-preservation reasons. And I'd have a lot more respect for that kind of initiative. I mean, I would not support it, but I think it becomes much more credible to the voters.
Mr. Stark.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It's been suggested that instead of doing this change to term limits, that we change it so that House members can serve 4 terms in the House, keep the 12 in the total. It makes it so that the congruency between if the person could run and then run for the Senate. Would that find your support in any way?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Starr, I really believe we should let the law work the way it reads now rather than be tinkering with it. Mm-hmm. The way that expands out terms is I think the present law works, and I think we need to let it work. To me, there's no evidence that's been shown to me that it does not serve the people well. And as I pointed out, many of the folks who are here this term wouldn't have been here if any of these changes had been put in place. So I'm, I'd really be more comfortable just letting the current law work.
Follow this script?
Yes,
please. Are you familiar with how turnover would work prior to term limits in this building?
Through the election process,
mm-hmm.
Representative? Sure.
And there was significant turnover. I mean, people didn't stay here forever.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Representative, that's true that it's not unusual for people to serve 2 or 3 terms voluntarily in the past and to leave the body and go off and do something else. But in many districts, that wasn't true. There were many representatives who did serve longer terms. And I think one of the real benefits of our current law is that it throughout the state, it opens up the process to participation by more to run and to get elected to the legislature. Now, of course, there's another way of addressing that problem. That's campaign finance and a variety of other ways in which you might try to level the playing field. But I don't see that being done. And in reality, it's very, very hard to beat incumbents. I think across the board, I think if we have that kind of required turnover, which, again, reinforces the belief in the citizen legislation and participation by more people, I think we're serving our state better.
Mr. Judge, just a couple of follow-ups. Representative Witt, you ran for Congress in 94 and 96?
Correct.
Did you sign the U.S. Senate pledge in positive Congress?
Yes, I did.
Okay. Yeah, Representative Starr alluded to it, the amount of time people served in this body prior to term limits. I think there was a pretty good turnover. There were a few who stayed a long, long time. And I think removing the limits on each house and leaving a 12-year cap in place will allow legislators to gain a little bit of experience, yet still keep people from building a dynasty here and from becoming so entrenched that they're never removed. I think the 12 years will serve that. I believe that as a policy decision, that it makes better policy. I've seen a number of polls, and the people of Oregon like this idea better if they can retain their current sitting legislator. Polls I have seen show that. People tend to like their own legislator, but dislike the legislature as a body. And so from that point, I do think this is a good policy decision, but would entertain a response from the representative.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would have a response to that. Number one, certainly there is some process whereby a new representative needs to learn the system here and the process here. And there is a learning curve. Frankly, it's not a real steep learning curve, and frankly, it doesn't take that long. I think one of the true advantages of seniority is you become committee chairs. And when you're committee chairs, you can accomplish a whole lot more than someone who isn't a committee chair because you frankly have a whole lot more direct impact on the bills that are coming through your committee. The comment about liking your own legislator but not liking the legislature is true until you get a new legislator. Then you tend to like the new legislator. I still think it's serves the public well to support our current term limits law and to allow that turnover, because in reality, Representative, when you leave or I leave our districts, we're going to be replaced by someone who probably the people are going to like just as well as they like you or I. I would point out, for example, in my district, House District 7, Representative Filoti served for 12 years. All that period of time, effectively, it was impossible to beat him. He was either a Democrat or a Republican. So I'm not speaking to how good a representative he was or wasn't. That's not the point I'm making. The point I'm making is under current law, that couldn't last. It would be three terms and the process would be opened up. Again, I think we are serving the people well to let the law that they put on the books through their initiative process to let it work and then evaluate it over time. I think it is way premature to be doing this.
Mr. Devlin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Representative Witt. I told the committee chair that I'm inclined to vote no on this bill, and that if the vote was needed, I would probably give a courtesy vote to get this out of committee, because I think this is something that every member of the House should have an opportunity to vote on, and I shouldn't deprive them of that. Two aspects that I've always found problems with this. One is that it's only been in place for a relatively short period of time. And so we don't really know what the long-term ramifications of it are, and why should we change it so soon after the voters have spoken. The second is that there are 90 men and women in this building that are either representatives or state senators, and there are over 3 million people in this state. And I think there's literally thousands of other people that could do just as good a job, perhaps even better. But one of the questions I wanted to ask directly is that this committee has debated back and forth between changes in term limits or annual session as a way to address the minimal amount of exposure level that representatives receive in this process. I mean, some proponents of term limits have compared it to if 3 terms, well, that's actually the equivalent of 18 months. Well, I don't really believe that, but that's how they presented it. How would you view this in terms of annual session? Because both of them could have the same impact in terms of impacts on the citizen legislature.
Representative, I would much prefer, you know, if we perceive a problem here in terms of accumulating experience and effectiveness with newer legislators, I would much rather see us go to annual sessions and with some specific limits in terms of the amount of time that we're going to serve each session. I'd much rather see us go and do that and go and change the term limits law. Again, a number of reasons, number one being that the voters just put this on the ballot, just put this into law back in 1992, we should let it work. And secondly, even if we went to annual sessions, at least at a minimum, every 6 years in the House, every 8 years in the Senate, we know we are forcing some turnover in the body, which I think is a good thing. So if there's a problem there, I think the annual sessions is a more effective way and a more appropriate way of getting at that problem, as opposed to going and asking the voters to change the law that they just passed a few years ago.
Any further questions? Come on, John.
Any other questions?
Just a comment, Mr. Chair. We have that bill before us as well.
We do?
Chair, it doesn't have a name on it, doesn't it?
Correct.
And Larry Edwards is on that one, too.
Oh, my goodness.
Smorgasbord of election here.
Thank you, Representative Wood. Appreciate your time. Thank you, Tony. Judge, would you like to come in? Please.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm Mike MacArthur from Sherman County. In my experience here in the legislature representing the people of Sherman County over the first 4 years, or the last four terms, I've noticed the incredible complexity. I think each session I've been involved with the legislature, I've noticed how much more difficult, how much more involved the process has become. The term limits process, I think, is a difficult one to wrestle with because there are a number of other issues involved, and I heard this term, a very interesting discussion of that. Some of that has come from the initiative process. In fact, the whole idea of term limits has come from the initiative process. Sometimes the initiative process has been criticized as one of the flaws of democracy. I think what you can say about that is the problem with democracy is when you have a problem with too much democracy, you need more democracy. And I think the problem here is perhaps the people haven't been asked the right question. They were offered one choice. Relative term limits, you want term limits, here's the deal. And that's what they were given. What you're talking about here today is a modification of that. I think, and would support some modification of the term limits provision. I think the problem is that the only people today that can't run for the legislature, the people precluded from running for the legislature, the only Oregon citizens who can't run are convicted felons and termed out legislators. Which is, I think, unfortunately, we lose a lot of institutional knowledge. I think some of the issues that are discussed here take a great deal of expertise, and allowing someone to serve longer than 3 terms or 2 terms in the Senate or 12 years allows the development of that expertise. I think perhaps the problem that people were shooting at here was the power of incumbency, as has been discussed, and perhaps there's other ways to get at that. Perhaps one of the limitations that you might consider is a timeout, a removal from office for some period of time before coming back. I would support the idea of putting some other choices before the people. I don't think that is self-serving in regards to your position here. I think that if the people are given another choice, they could simply look at it as another choice. This is an option. It's not something that the legislature has decided. So I would encourage support of some modification of the term limits, some mechanism that would allow greater expertise to be developed in this body on specific subject matter, and I think that giving people choices is a part of our democratic process. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. MacArthur, any questions? Councilman Devlin, any questions? Thank you very much for your testimony today. Lou Barrett?
My name is Lou Barrett, the Chairman of SCARF, Representative. I just want to let you know what maybe the grassroots are thinking out there and bring in points and some information. I believe Representative Witt covered most of the areas. But I believe the grassroots, and I'm talking about the people, the citizens that work into the political process and the voters, they will be cynical. As you know, they're cynical now. Many of them are changing to independent. And I believe if this comes out, you're going to see a great amount of turn to independent voters
and the parties, good or bad, will be diminished in number and in size. I don't see any pressure from the public to change this. I look at this freshman class, and I just, hey, amen. That's the reason why we have freshmen. Because I think, compared to other freshman classes, I think they are great. Okay, they talk about experience, but people are telling me they want citizen legislators. And when they say citizen legislators without the power plays, if you have 12 years and the leadership, for example, the Speaker of the House, the President of the Senate, Representative Starr, there might be an issue there, and so we'd like to have the vote for this one issue. And, in my conscience, I don't think I can do that. And say, well, we had you pegged be a chairman of a committee. I think we're going to have to put this on hold, and that put pressure on each representative. And so I see all that. The power that a speaker or a president has could be positive or negative. I think term limit laws work. We haven't given enough time. My constituents tell me that let's give it time. Personally, I see it's working. There might be some adjustments. I think the change that Representative Devlin brought up about having 6 1-year experiences with 90 days, the annual sessions, that would take care of some of the experiences that people say that they don't have. And I believe it's self-serving. I think that was mentioned, I think, Representative Edwards, you mentioned that anybody here today now that no way that they can become elected, that gives us its policy instead of self-serving. I think that's going in the right direction, but I don't think I would be against that also at this point because the people voted on that. We need to give it more time for it to work. I have a survey, talk about a survey, and just I have a couple of questions to ask and percentages, and I just want to go over this on a poll. It says, some people say that it's good for politicians to stay in office a long time, so that they can gain experience needed to run the state. Others say it's bad for politicians to stay in office a long time because they end up serving self-interest groups instead of their constituents. What do you think? Is it good or bad for politicians to stay in office for a long time? Good, 17.7%. Bad, 68.1%. Now, that's overwhelming. Another one, do you think that politicians who want to change the term limits laws really believe that the voter-approved term limits are bad policy, or do they simply want to stay in power longer? 22.2% say they believe it's bad policy. 59.4% they want to stay in power longer. So you're talking about the cynicism among the public if you put this out in the public. We're having a hard time for people even to go out to vote. And I think as we see the elections, that we're going to see that on a downward turn if we don't turn something around. We don't have a level playing field. Representative Witt mentioned all of the incumbents were elected. That's not 1%, 99%, not 98%. It's a greater number. And so how can you level that playing field? And another thing somebody said to me is, well, how you could do this is why don't the legislative go out and gather the signatures for what they want initiative? You're trying to make the initiative process greater. I mean, 50% increase of signatures right now. And so I think it would somebody suggested that you as legislators should go out and gather signatures if you want to change this law and get the signatures on that. So that was kind of a suggestion that you could think about if you want to gather. But I think the answer, without changing anything, could be annual sessions. But I believe overwhelmingly, if you change the law, the public is going to react. And I think the public will...
Lou, let me interrupt right there. We're not going to change the law. This is a referral to the voters. The voters will want to change.
Or even refer to the voters because they tend to change the law.
Are you aware that from 1987 to 1997, in the Oregon House, there was 87% turnover in the Oregon House?
Well, that's because some of it, in the past or prior to that, I don't think that didn't know that was the case. But we have a new term limit that people, I'm just saying, that people voted for. It's only in effect for 6 years. Give it time to work.
So philosophically, you're not opposed to term, you're not in favor of term limits. You just because the people voted for it, you believe that they don't even want.
I'm in favor of term limits, but I think at this point it's too early to adjust it.
Is there any other questions for Mr. Barris?
Just comment, in your poll, even though I oppose putting this on the ballot at this point, I think the poll shows clearly, in a sense, how the way you structure a question can offer impact what the result of it is.
No.
If we did a poll of term limited legislative districts and said, would you like the opportunity to still vote for Representative A, or would you want him or her banned from further election, you might come up with a completely different result.
I didn't make the poll, Representative Devlin. I just, this is a poll that was out there that I just quoted.
Okay.
Okay.
Mr. Beyer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Lou, you and I have talked about this issue in the past. I don't like term limits. I never have. And I apologize for coming late in your testimony, but you made a statement about 97%. Return. Well, I think
that was Representative Witt mentioned.
Okay. I think it is. Of the seven members here, two of us beat incumbent to win our first election. Are you aware of that?
Yeah, I was aware that some of you have done, and I think I'll stop there.
Actually, three of us. That's how I got in 1989.
I didn't realize that.
Thank you very much.
I defeated a Republican.
Mr. Chairman, are we having just a general discussion here?
We are having a general discussion here, and we've got to be in caucus right now.
Oh.
We've got a Republican caucus starting at 4:30, so four of us are late.
Yeah,
but is there one other individual that wanted to come up during work session and have a word? Mr. Gillian? If you want to have... Okay. Okay, what we're going to do then is recess the work session on SCR 23. And the other bill on our agenda today is Senate Bill 1282.
Do we have anybody here to talk?
Yes, we do have some folks who have been waiting for a while to session on that bill. And we have one of the individuals here from ODOT and
the
contracting.
Do you have some amendments ready here?
Yes, I know we do. Are the last set of amendments ready? They talk about 10% of the amount in question.
You could ask them if you'd like to have us work it or if they want to talk.
Are you folks from KT contracting aware of the amendment that indicates the amount you could receive would be 10% of the amount in question? A9, Rick and Max, that cover all of them?
I believe so. I'm checking for my stack right now. A9, the last one?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. And from ODOT, you okay with the A9?
I understand
it. Okay. Open a work session on Senate Bill 1282.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative
Manning. I move the A9 amendments to Senate Bill 1282.
Could you explain for us the A9 amendment?
I'd be happy to. What this does is we're trying to avoid fiscal impact and get some movement on this. So what we do is we focus on the amount in dispute beyond what has been agreed upon is properly paid. And under this amendment, if you have to go through the formal claims process, you would receive, on prevailing, 10% of the amount in excess up to the $50,000 level. So you could receive up to $5,000 in the first bracket. In the second bracket, between $50,000 and $100,000, you'd receive 7.5% of the amount in excess. Then you jump to a third bracket, which is from $100,000 up to $1 million, you'd receive 5% of the amount in excess. And after that, you'd receive 2.5% of the amount in excess. So it puts the pressure on the department to be forthcoming about resolving the claims. At the same time, it puts some limits all the way through the process, and it focuses on the amount that was not agreed upon rather than simply the original claim. And this is designed as a compromise that limits the fiscal impact but opens the door for some fairness in this process.
All righty. Yes. Commissioner Edwards.
Yes, Commissioner Maddox.
Mm-hmm.
Our witness.
Question chair. Chair Yield.
Just so I'm following what the staff making summary saying here. So it goes up in increments. It's scaled, and then again, an award over $1 million, you can receive up to 2%, or is it actually 2%?
If it's over $1 million, you receive 2.5%.
You have a question? We have a motion before us, colleagues, to move the -9A9 amendment to Senate Bill 1282. Is there any further discussion?
I'm not sure that was supposed to be 2.5%.
Is that a mistake?
I think it's supposed to be 2%.
Well, I kind of like the 2.5. I thought that was a little extra.
Mm-hmm. Mr. Chair, do we have a fiscal on this one? Is the fiscal finally written?
Mr. Chair, we have fiscals up until this one, and the Department of Transportation was prepared to say orally what they thought the fiscal would be.
Can you come forward, please, for the record?
Chair Simmons, members of the committee, Doug Timmel, Maintenance Engineer of the Oregon Department of Transportation, we estimate the fiscal impact on this at about $35,000.
Which is down significantly from the last amendment.
Yes.
That's for the biennium.
I think that was a biennium number.
Okay, in the previous bill, the amendment to the fiscal was $96,700 for 99-2001 biennium and $193,000 for the 2001-2003 biennium. This is down significantly from what the last set of amendments would have cost.
Mr. The question?
Yes.
I'd like a question. Could you describe what most of your contracts over $1 million?
Sure, Simmons, Representative Edwards. It would be a pretty rare contract claim that would be over $1 million. Most of the majority of our contracts over $1 million? Probably. Probably over half that are over $1 million, but usually not a lot over $1 million. I think the average contract is
$1 million. The last fiscal we had indicated there were no.
I'm looking at
yeah.
Right. I missed
the secret. Right.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, can I explain a couple other things?
Yes.
For the benefit of our friends who are proponents, too, this gets us out of the delayed implementation date. It gets the system in place, and as we get used to the system, we can revisit it to see if the figures need to be adjusted in the next session. But at least we can get a system for some award in place and get moving on it, something that's installed.
Okay. Alrighty. Is there any further discussion on the A9 amendment? Is there any objections to the A9 amendment? Hearing none, so ordered. That's the amendment.
I move Senate Bill 1282 to the floor as amended with a due pass recommendation.
Okay, colleagues, you've heard the motion. Move Senate Bill 1282 as amended to the A9 amendment to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any further discussion? Please call the roll.
Representative
Byers. Aye. Representative Edwards. Aye. Representative Edwards. Aye. Representative Gardner. Aye. Representative Manning.
Aye.
Representative
Starr.
Aye.
Representative Manning.
Aye.
And the motion carries. The bill goes to the floor of the House to due pass recommendation. Volunteers for Carrier. Representative Manning to carry the bill. And that closes the work session on Senate Bill 282. I hope that we can come back. We're going to go in caucus now, and I hope it doesn't take us too awfully long to finish it.
10 minutes, I'll be over then.
You may have missed it already. Let's hope not. So we will recess the hearing then, and try to get that in here and we can. We'll call the House and Public Affairs Committee back to order.
You guys don't like it?
And we left, colleagues, we have two bills to work on yet today, HM1 and SJR23. And I will open a work session on HM1.
Mr. Chair.
Mr. Starr.
Move HM1 with forward to UPAS recommendation.
Colleagues, is there any discussion?
I would just point to the record in the public hearing section on the bill.
Clerk, please call the roll.
Representative Byer.
Aye.
Representative Devlin.
Aye.
Representative Edwards.
Aye.
Representative Gardner.
Aye.
Representative Manning.
Aye.
Representative
Clark. Aye.
Aye. And HM1 goes before the House to do pass recommendation. Representative Canopy, the carrier. It will stand at ease just a moment. And we will have open a work session on SGR 23 and discuss a little bit the amendments that are before us. And Representative Edwards also has an amendment, and there's some discussion of holding the vote over for a day or so before we go ahead and jump into this and commit ourselves, and I'd be happy to discuss that with members of the committee.
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
You don't want any motion from any member?
It may be better if we don't have any just right now until we talk about it a little bit.
Mr. Jones?
Yes, Representative Manning.
I like Senate Joint Resolution 23 as it is with one qualification.
Uh-huh.
I think that paragraph 2, we should get an amendment that allows it to go on to the election ballot this November. There's going to be a special election, it's pretty much guaranteed, we hope, on the Victims' Rights Amendment, which have passed out of Senate Judiciary. Even if all of them didn't come out, they're set up so they'd be voted on this November. And so we already have an election coming in November, and this would allow folks to rely on whatever change occurs in the next election cycle, since it would be plenty of time for the primary and general election in the year 2000. As to the merits of the original Senate Joint Resolution, I join with Representative Byer in saying that I'm one of those people who has never supported term limits, and I acknowledge that. I will point out that when I publicly debated term limits against the proponent, I remember twice raising in my response to their arguments the point that they kept talking about Congress and weren't talking about the legislature, and I challenged them in rebuttal to tell us why we needed this for the state legislature. Both times they managed to not respond to that in rebuttal and just talk about Congress again. The original term limits piece was sold to the public on the basis of Congress. The state legislative restrictions were thrown in. They were not debated extensively. If you go back and you look at the material that was distributed, it was Congress, and oh, by the way, state legislatures. That was a theme. This simply would allow the voters the opportunity to see whether or not a better formula would be applied in terms of the 12 years. And it's a clean formula. It just says 12 years in the state legislature, thank you very much, mix or match, which is understandable. I'm amazed at the number of people that still see me in my district say, well, since you stepped down, gee, you get another 3 terms, don't you? Don't you get to serve 3 terms? And I have to say no. Oh, is this a lifetime restriction? These are knowledgeable people who pay attention to things, and they don't even know that it's a lifetime restriction right now. They're amazed to find that by stepping down, it didn't make any difference. I know there's amendments that are being proposed in various ways, one of which says, well, we won't count time that you served as appointee. I don't buy into that because I think it complicates things too much, makes it hard for the voting public to understand what this is all about, and this could be a fairly simple measure. I also disagree, frankly, with the idea that somehow we have to flay ourselves and say, well, gee, this shouldn't apply to anyone that's currently serving. there's already an implementation date in the law. We would maintain that with Senate Joint Resolution 23 as it's come over, going back to the 1992 cycle, as I recall. So none of that would change. The limits would still be in effect, but there would be a different formula. I would add that when Representative Byer mentioned earlier the two members of this panel were elected by not incumbents, well, so was I back in 1988 when I ran. I knocked out an incumbent and came in, and then I served my four terms. I'm the one member who's now got, I'm in my fifth term in the House, and when I hear these arguments that somehow you become jaded or you're into power trips, well, I don't quite take it personally, but I probably could if I wanted to and say, well, you know, what part of jaded do I have here? I think that the problem that I've seen as someone who's returned now under term limits is people feel too much pressure to get instant results. I'll mention one more story and then I'll stop. Back in 1989, I wanted to change a provision in the law that had to do with child support and workers' comp. Details don't matter. There was this global piece I wanted to change. That first section, I got a piece of it. We made sure that people getting time loss supported their kids out of the time loss with the formula. 1991 section, came back, got another piece, which was when you got a permanent disability award, you also had to take care of your kids, your child support. And everyone came around to that. 93 session, back again, what about your settlement payments and workers' comp? Shouldn't you also cover your child support obligation? It took three sessions in a row to get around to the point where you could say in workers' comp now, you really can't avoid your child support obligations. No one's complaining about that anymore, but at the time, each change required some willingness to be patient, see how the first part worked, see if people had a comfort level, and come back. Now, sure, you could say I got that done in three terms. The answer is, though, you need to have patience even when you're in your third term and you're looking at doing something. We feel too much pressure to try to get things, everything done tomorrow. Got to have it all right now. And we're feeling that pressure on a number of measures that are turning as this session continues, where some people feel a need for immediate results. That is harmful to the process, and I'd add that it's harmful to the interpersonal relations of some of the legislators who do get short-tempered with one another, who feel like they've got to have something now, and they aren't willing to listen to the idea that maybe they can come back next session. And I think we've created that atmosphere. The, said I'd stop with the war story, so I better stop right there.
Thank you very much for spending a minute.
Through this question, Mr. Empire.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can someone help me a little on the subsection 3 of the new language in the printed bill? And I haven't bothered to see if the amendments take it out, but notwithstanding Section 12, Article 2 of the Constitution, dealing with appointments.
Referring to the Section 3 of the printed bill.
Printed bill.
Mm-hmm.
Article 2, Section 12 of the Constitution deals with temporary appointments to office. My question would be that under this language, does only the time period that the person is serving as an appointee count, or does the entire term count?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, I believe under this language, the entire term counts.
Well, as I understood the shift in the language, this counts for purposes of the 12 years or the 8 years, but there is another provision that says on the back that you can't be on the ballot or be appointed if serving the remainder of the term of the vacant office or if serving out the term you're elected to would cause you to violate any provision. What I'm getting at here is, for example, if someone served 8 months in the Senate and then later on after serving 10 years in the House, well, I'm starting to think of the time frame, but the basic idea being the 8 months counts as 8 months. And there may be a time when you serve a certain number of terms where under mix and match you could run for the Senate and serve out 4 years if you hadn't had an appointment. But if you've had 8 months in the Senate already, that takes you 8 months beyond 12 years. You can't run for that office. So the 12 years is still your total freeze out. But the way it read before, they automatically counted a full term. And the reason it's different is 8 months in the Senate would have counted as 4 years in the Senate.
Mm-hmm.
And if you move to the House, it still would have counted as 4 years against 12 years. Now it would probably only chop you off 2 years because you obviously couldn't serve. That 8 months would ruin one term, but it wouldn't ruin 2 terms in the House under this new formula. I don't know if I...
If you'd been appointed to 8 months and then got elected to 4 terms in the House, a total of 8 years and 8 months of service, you couldn't run for a Senate term because you would not have enough eligibility left to complete the term.
But you could run for a House term.
You could run for one more House term. Mr. Just for clarification, under the current term limits law that we're living right now, if you're appointed to the Senate and you serve 8 months of an unexpired term, you are charged with the 12 years of all 4 years.
Under 4 years, right. Full 4 years.
Okay. This, as it's written, would change that?
The effect, if I may, would be it would charge you with 4 years towards the Senate because you burned up part of a term,
but you couldn't complete a whole term.
But it would only charge you 2 years towards the House because it's only 8 months.
Okay. That's right. That's right. I understand it.
Well, Mr. Chair, I think that does change it a little bit more than just opening the door to removing the internal limits. And I think maybe that provision could be considered by the voters to be another loophole that people are trying to, legislators are going to be self-serving. And I would personally be more comfortable to say that, as currently does, an appointment to any term it is considered a term. Was that?
Well, and the effect is that if you got appointed to 2 years or just 2 months in the House, it would preclude you from a whole term.
But appointment of 2 months in the Senate would not preclude from the House.
Right.
So you could, in fact, I guess you still couldn't be more than 12 years total. But I guess it would have an effect to, make people think more about accepting an appointment so that they can then run as an incumbent. But
none of us are crazy enough to accept appointments that we never burned up 2 terms.
But maybe it would not, because you could not be a senator except an appointment. It still would burn a term for Senate, but you would not be an incumbent running for the House at that point in time.
Right.
So maybe it doesn't matter. It just seems a little bit, more of a tweak.
Well, the only difference is it's pretty close to the way the current term limits law reads.
It's pretty close.
Representative Mannix?
I'm going to say, I think it's probably an esoteric point that we would understand, but I think the voters' eyes will glaze over at that point. The real point they're going to notice is the 12 years mix and match. And whether or not we're going to then, in effect, allow someone to serve 12 years in the House or 12 years in the Senate, which there will be some tendency to do in the future. To me, this 12 years mix or match is a nice policy option to give to the voters. The worst that can happen is they'll say no. Okay. I guess some folks worry that we look like schmucks for sending out a proposal to the voters, when I just see it as empowering them with a choice they didn't have before, and if they refuse it, fine. We accept that and move on. And it doesn't mean that we're against term limits. We're sending out another version of term limits. That's where I disagree with folks who say that even though I'm against term limits, I see this as just a better formula for what the voters probably thought they were voting for in the first place, if they paid attention to the Oregon legislature at all when they were voting against Congress.
Further discussion? Mr. Chair, just for the record, I have always been opposed to term limits. I always felt the best term limit rule is the ballot box. My concern is certainly the implementation date that we're putting it on the ballot and whether this will look somewhat self-serving or not. And I guess I'd certainly urge you to set it over for a day or two so we can take a look at it and think about that as well.
Mr. Chair, would you care to explain or give me a 30-second version of the difference between the -1 and the -3 amendments? Or Senator
Abel staff to do that.
Mr. Chair and Representative Beyer, the -3 amendments, the change from the way the resolution is drafted that they apply on or after the effective date of the bill to full term starting on or after the effective date of the bill instead of the December 3rd, 1992. So that state, it would not, the dash three amendments would make it so that a person is in their third term will not be eligible for any more terms. It would not affect the person who's now term limited. Out.
And the dash one would.
And the dash.
The new term limits would only apply to people who have are first elected in November of 2000. Right?
Mm-hmm.
Edwards, the DAFTs are his amendments.
Yeah. The way I attempted to have these drafted, and assuming this is what was carried through in drafting, was to say, if you were elected when term limits were in place, then you still are bound by that. So if somebody, for example, somebody who served their term and were turned out last time, they couldn't come back to the House under this. Anybody, what we're trying to get at is newly elected, and newly elected is anybody who is never under this rubric. And the idea there, again, and I, you know, Representative Maddox, is I understand his concern about trying to keep this simple, but I think what this is really trying to do is to say, we are offering this up to the voters as a way to suggest that this in no way will help us. Since we're not doing this through an initiative, we're going to refer it. I just think it gives it a political clarity and purity that's important. But that's the intent of the dash three, is to basically take out those who are currently sitting, that is, we wouldn't be affected by the change in any way. We would still live under this current design. And the dash one, I guess staff could explain that, is represent Beck's change.
Yes, the dash one amendment changed the 12, instead of a 12-year lifetime limit, it would be a 12-year consecutive limit, so that if you were out for a term, you could start over with 12 years.
Okay. Then, Mr. Chair, we also have a dash four.
And those amendments are from Senator Shannon, and they, while the resolution is written, you just discussed how it affects appointments to vacancies. Senator Shannon's amendment would not have vacancies, appointments to vacancies be counted at all, even if they were 3 years out of a 4-year Senate term, would not count at all. Only if you were elected to the office. And it's retroactive so that time spent since December 3rd, 1982 as an appointed member would not count against your new lifetime limit.
Okay. And then you go to the death.
And no trailers.
One.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Mr. Maddox, do you have a comment?
Well, I just commented that with all due respect to Representative Edwards' amendment, I see it as the anti-grandfather clause. all those who might be grandfathers will be kept out. All the youngins get to be taken care of. Who knows, there may be some folks who come out of the past who want to come back, and people may want them back. I still kind of like the idea of presented by Representative Gardner, which is you look to what the voters want to do, and especially if someone stepped down. If anything, I'd go with Representative Beck's version, which says if you step down, you get a fresh start. It really is hard to come back. I speak from experience. It's an uphill climb when they know that you're no longer in office and you're trying to get back in.
I think so. The issue is when we were elected, we knew the term limits. We still have them as they exist now. So it wouldn't preclude anybody who, again, with the dash three that was elected prior to '92 to come in and say, "I want to serve." That would be those who got caught up in this change in the Constitution.
Yeah, well, which requires to have 3 sessions of eligibility in the House and 2 sessions of eligibility in the Senate. That's a disposal.
It's just a form of bondage that I don't think the voters would understand anyway.
Did you want to comment, Representative Maddox, on the dash four?
I have a real problem with ignoring a point of service. It makes a second-class service. To me, a point of service, whether it's in session or not, is service. And asking the voters to ignore that and saying it shouldn't be counted as a disservice to the service.
Okay.
I just made that up, but it should. With all due respect.
Representative Devlin.
This indicates that there's a consensus on this committee.
Well, I don't know if there's a consensus on this committee. Mr. Gardner has asked that we set this over at least till tomorrow or Wednesday and give you a day. So a chance to have it.
My mind works in this question.
Hey, this is discussion. Thank you. Thank you for tuning me in.
Yes, I do want to say, with all due respect, that having served for 8 months in the Senate as an appointee, I certainly would not have wanted to go in there and have people sort of think that you weren't very serious. I mean, I had 2 one-day sessions where we went over gubernatorial appointments and all that. We did constituent service, and that was time in the trenches, even though it wasn't during a session. So I do think that we ought to be counting that time. Then, as to this whole package, I still think if the lowest common denominator for some reform is some revised version, I'm not going to oppose that. I would encourage us to keep this as simple as possible so it's understandable and sellable, but I wouldn't object to some modification if that's necessary to get consensus.
Mr. Devlin, I think you had a conceptual amendment you were talking about.
Mr. Chairman, well, this case not really. I had offered a conceptual amendment that you could be limited to the same number of terms, but they would be limited to those numbers of terms in the same party. So if you change parties. How ideologically pure people actually were.
I've been there, done that.
Yeah, we'll get a managing member. Mr. Chair?
Yes.
In our discussions, it was to move the vote to the 99 election. This bill doesn't do that. I don't see an amendment that does that.
Correct. And we do not have an amendment in writing before us today. What I had considered is the potential of suspending the rules for purposes of a conceptual amendment to change the language at the next regular general election to the November 1999 election.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
What I suggest respectfully is perhaps we could ask LLC to prepare just such an amendment to have it ready, since we're going to defer this. They can do it pretty fast since it's in some other bills. And I respectfully suggest that it be for the special election to be held this November, or if there is no special election this November, then the primary.
I've had some discussions that have been managed, and it appears to me that if they're going to put it off till the primary,
make it the general,
we might just as well let the legislature come back in and deal with the issue again.
Oh, all right.
Send it out so that it would have the same effect. It would not have any effect on the coming election cycle if it doesn't get held in November this fall.
I mean, there's a 1% or less chance that the governor would veto the bill setting special election, but I'm advised by legislative counsel that if he did that, actually, things that are set for a November special election will flow over to the primary election automatically. Although I'm now recommending on other bills, such as the Victims' Rights Bill, that it say that if there isn't a special election in November, then it carries over, in that case, to the primary, because it will have a difference. It still means that you can have an impact sooner. In this case, if you're right, it wouldn't affect the election cycle, but you would still at least get a chance to have it on the ballot.
Mm-hmm.
And for the next time around, so the next legislative assembly wouldn't have to address the issue again. The voters would have it in front of them in November of 2000. Something to think about.
So let's see what we'll do. Janet, if you have the amendment drafted to move this November, we will come back to this on Wednesday and give your caucus a chance to talk about it. We can talk about it again, and then we will press forward at that time. Okay?
Mr. Chairman?
Yes.
I think it'd be great to have a provision that says change of party, you lose all prior service, and then if you serve appointment time, it doesn't count either. Boy, that would be double bonus for me. So. Just kidding.
I think I'm glad you were kidding, because it appears to me that it would be that complicating factor for
you. Okay, do you want that amendment?
We'll talk about that a little bit off the record. And then we will, you know, if it isn't for me, we will adjourn.